Well, I stand here before you today because I believe that God has taught me some ideas about life and love, and Dr. Ken was gracious enough to allow me to share it with you. You see, our God brought me, Mike G, from a bar stool to a pastor seat. It's incredible. From a journey of brokenness to finding healing and being able to share that healing with others. Today we're going to talk a little bit about relationships. Before anyone checks out, it's not just about the marriage relationship. It will apply to any and all relationships in your life. So it will be for everyone in here, and we'll kind of piggyback off of Pastor's message last week. In John 14, 15, Jesus says, "If you love me, you will obey my commandments." I think we've all heard that phrase, "If you love me, you will, ... at different times in our lives. At times it's in a healthy way, like Jesus would say it, or "If you love me, you will help with the chores around the house." Right, ladies? If you love me, you will put up boundaries in your life so you won't be tempted to stray. If you love me, you would stop hurting me. Other times, it's very manipulative and unhealthy. The alcoholic would say, "If you love me, you will buy me another drink." The gambler would say, "If you love me, you will loan me some more money." The teen might say, "If you love me, you would let me play video games all day long." The child would say, "If you love me, you'd let me eat the whole chocolate cake." The husband, "If you love me, you won't mind me playing golf every day." Right, honey? John 14, 15 carries a huge, and I mean huge, implication that must be considered. "If you love me, you will obey my commandments" implies, if you don't love me, you won't obey my commandments. Ouch. I think we all can all know that we can have emotional feelings for someone and still do unloving things to them, can't we? That realization is very profound for me. And looking back over my life and pondering the times that I can recall that I did not obey God, man, was that an eye-opener to how many times that I was unloving to God through my actions, even though my heart may have wanted to love Him. And how I could be unloving to my wife, to those around me, and even to myself. And not necessarily intentionally. Suddenly, it wasn't just about breaking the rules or the law like I learned when I was growing up. It was about being unloving, no matter how unintentional it was. So I began this kind of silent journey to learn what being unloving and loving does and should look like in my life and relationships. And I hope I have some new ideas for you to consider. It doesn't mean that I love perfectly, but it does mean that I have some new ideas to work with in trying to do it better. And I think you will find that this is a little bit different perspective than the norm. At least my wife tells me I'm a little different. I don't know what to do with that, but if you have your Bibles, please turn to Matthew chapter 22, verses 34 through 39. And if you're able, please stand with me as we read God's Word together. Hearing that Jesus had silenced the Sadducees, the Pharisees got together. One of them, an expert in the law, tested him with this question: "Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law?" Jesus replied, Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment, and the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. Thank you. You may be seated. Now, a lot of Christians can quote these verses from memory, right? We've heard them many, many times. But not all can quote the very next verse, verse 40. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. You see, everything the law was meant to convey, everything the prophets wanted us to know, is summed up in loving God and others as ourselves. Doing life in the kingdom has now been given a brand new context in which to operate. Loving God and loving others as yourself. If the kingdom now operates under this new umbrella of love explaining the law, don't you think it's imperative to understand what love means? And where would you say is the best place to learn about love? From God, right? From the Bible. 1 John 4:8 says this: whoever does not love does not know God, because God is love. Love is who He is. It's what He is. And shouldn't the best ideas about how to love appropriately come from Him and not the world? I believe most people want to love well. The problem is in their definition of what love is and what it looks like in our relationship with God, those around us, and even with ourselves. If we are going to love like Jesus, don't we need to learn what His definition of love is? Not so much what we've learned, what it means from our experiences in this world. The Bible uses mainly two words for love. Most of you have probably heard them: phileo and agape. Phileo is a love of the heart and the emotions. Many think it means brotherly love, but that comes from a compound word, Philadelphia, which is a compound word for philo and adelphos. It literally means an emotional love for your brothers and sisters. That's where they get the brotherly love from. Phileo love is a love that you feel in the heart. It basically is what it is at any given moment, but it's not so easily controlled, and it can vary with circumstances. It causes us to engage or to disengage in relationships according to how we feel, our emotions. It can be very helpful in relationships of all kinds, or it can be detrimental to making sound relational decisions. Some stay in abusive relationships because of their heart love, phileo, for another. Agape love is a love of the mind and the will. It is a willful decision to do what is right and best for another, or making decisions for the good of another. And it is often unconditional, like the kind of love that God has for us. Agape is the word that the Bible uses any time that we are instructed or commanded to love. And the earlier verses we read all contain the word agape. God doesn't command you to feel a certain way towards Him or others emotionally. That kind of love is great when it's present, but it cannot be commanded. He asks you to consider how your decisions and how your actions line up with what He has said is good and right, and how they affect others, regardless of how you feel. And then your heart will follow. Do you think Jesus felt good about being mocked and beaten and dying on our behalf? No. He did it because he knew it's what we needed and what was best for us. Appropriate love usually takes a measure of both phileo and agape love. But agape love must be learned because it's not so natural for us. Sometimes the heart and phileo agrees with the mind and agape love, and sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes there's a battle here. Have you ever seen TV shows where someone was catfished online by someone trying to get their money through making them fall in love with them by saying all the right things? Their heart takes over, phileo, and makes unhealthy choices when their minds and understandings should tell them something is wrong here. That's agape love for oneself. And even though others are trying to warn them, their minds stay disengaged while their hearts make all the decisions. It can be very sad and destructive. We see this a lot in youth, in our young people, in teens, when they're in relationships, and they make decisions from the heart only because they don't have life experience or knowledge to be able to love appropriately from the mind and the will. So their heart makes a whole lot of decisions and can get them in trouble. Our society today confuses agape and phileo love. You hear them talk about love, 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 but they don't understand the difference. They condone certain behaviors because of their emotional love for others. And so they condone those behaviors. When they need to learn how lovingly telling them the truth is actually what is best for them. That's agape love. Now let's look closer at some ideas about love. Would you allow your children to eat sweets all day long? Or have hot dogs at every meal? No. Why? Because it's not good for them, right? And you don't allow what's not good for them because you love them. You love them with an agape love. You make mindful, willful choices to do what is best for them, regardless of how it makes either one of you feel. Same with playing video games all day or watching TV all day. Oh, it makes us happy. It makes us both happy. In those times that we do decide to allow it, it warms our hearts to see our children enjoy things that they like. And it makes them feel loved by us, phileo. But when we know what's best for them and they don't, isn't it our responsibility to do the right thing? That's agape love. And not just what makes them feel loved. Phileo. Agape love must take precedence, or we can end up doing what is actually unloving to them, can't we? Not even meaning to be unloving. Would you agree that we mainly get married out of phileo love, that love of the heart and emotions? But we stay married because of agape love, the love of the mind and the will to do what is right and best for each other. Because the heart and emotions, they go through highs and lows, don't they? It's like a roller coaster. The heart can be up and down. It's best to have and nurture both agape and phileo love in a relationship. But phileo love can change based on how we feel at any given moment. True agape love doesn't change so easily. Here is a verse that uses a form of both agape and phileo in it to help show this point. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verses 9 and 10. Now about your love for one another, we do not need to write to you. For you yourselves have been taught by God to love each other. First mention of here is the word Philadelphia, that compound word of philo and adelphos, that emotional love for your brothers and sisters. Second mention uses agape, a willful choice to do what is best for them. Now I'm going to reread these verses with these ideas in mind. Now about your love for one another, the phileo love, that emotional heart love that you have for each other, we do not need to write to you. It was so natural that we don't even need to talk about it. For you yourselves have been taught by God to love each other. Agape. You were taught by who? God. To have agape love for each other. To make willful choices to do what is best and right and godly for each other. They didn't need to write to them about their phileo love. It was happening naturally. They wanted to urge them or spur them on in their agape love for each other. Now, I hope that you're beginning to see that you can have emotional feelings for someone, phileo love, and actually not do the loving thing for them, agape love. Now, I want to look closely at what it means when we don't make willful choices for the good of God or others or even ourselves, that agape love. You all seen a dartboard. There's a game in darts that if you get a certain amount of bullseyes first, you win. That little round bullseye in the center is the mark that you're aiming for, right? Anything outside of that center bullseye is missing the mark. You've missed the mark. There's a New Testament Greek word that the literal translation is missing the mark. It's called hamartia. Hamartia is the word the translators translated sin. What is the mark in our faith? The mark is loving like Jesus and how he teaches us to love in his word, loving God and others as ourselves. Agape love, that's the mark. To make decisions that are best for God, for others, and for ourselves, not based on how we feel. That's agape versus phileo. Now, if everything in the kingdom now comes under the new context of loving God and others as ourselves, then wouldn't you agree that it's not so much about not breaking laws, the Old Testament standard, and has matured into learning how to love God and others appropriately, the New Testament standard? Oh, we still need rules and law, don't we? They teach us how it looks to love God and others appropriately when we are new or immature in our faith, and it shows us when we have violated the law of love. But hopefully we mature into our understanding to the point that we are following the rules naturally because we want to love appropriately. Make sense? Do you know how many times that we missed a mark in not loving God, others, or ourselves in appropriate ways? Sin. Many more times than any laws or rules that we can come up with from the Bible. I say this not to try to induce guilt. I say it so that we can understand the depth of what Christ did for us when he died to cover the missing of the marks of any kind. He died to cover them all, not just the rule breaking. Talking to a legalistic believer now is somewhat sad because they have tried to boil all of our missing of the marks into when we just broke certain rules. And they don't understand the true depth of missing the mark in all their relationships because they can't make a rule for all of them. How about when I do or say something unloving to my wife? Am I missing the mark in my relationship with her? I have sinned against her, and it may not be in any law or rule book. Or maybe I didn't include God in an important decision in my life. There's no rule for that. But am I missing the mark in my relationship with Him and myself? I think so. God wants you to know when you miss the mark, sin, so He can lovingly show you how to start hitting it. Not just condemn you for missing the mark. Jesus Christ suffered the consequences of us missing every mark. We miss the mark of God's standard of love many more times than we can break any law or rules. It's like having a kind and patient and loving professional dart player right there at your side. And every time you miss the mark, he shows you why you missed it and how to do it better the next time, how to start hitting the mark. He wants to teach us how to love him back and how to love each other and ourselves in appropriate ways. You see, God is all about relationships. The Bible is all about relationships. Sometimes it is possible for us to miss the mark, even when we think we're doing the right thing. I had a couple come to me for premarital counseling. I learned that they were living together and that she was still married to another man. They were waiting for the divorce so that they could get married. I pleaded with them for one of them to move out until the divorce was final. Not that I condoned the divorce, but she really needed to find the forgiveness and healing with her God before just jumping into another relationship. I shared how she needed to end one relationship well before starting another, and how estranged husbands can lose their ability to handle their emotions. Well, they chose to stay living together, and a couple of days after our meeting, the estranged husband laid in wait, and as the new boyfriend went outside to get the paper, he shot. And he killed him. It's a true story. They believed that they were doing the right thing for themselves and for each other. But relationally, they were out of bounds with God, with those around them, and even with themselves. And they paid a very heavy price. I've talked to men after they've had affairs on their wives and asked them to look at her in the eyes and tell her why she can believe it won't happen again. Here's some of the answers that I've heard. I don't want to lose you. I don't want to be alone. I don't know what I would do without you. The right thing for the wrong reason. And I have to interrupt them, keep them from burying themselves any further and from hurting her anymore. How much more self-focused can you be? I ask you to help her understand why she can trust you not to hurt her again, and all you do is talk about you. How about telling her that you have come to understand how you have made her feel, and be specific about how you destroyed her dreams and her self-esteem, how you made her feel unloved and unvalued and unsafe, about how you understand that when she was a little girl, she danced for her daddy, and she said, "Look at me, Daddy. Love me, Daddy." And God and her father handed her over to you to nurture and protect. And you trampled on her. And that you don't ever want to do those things to her again. and how you trampled on God's trust that he had in you to take care of her. And you don't ever want to do that to him again. And how you abused that gift that her family trusted you with. And you don't ever want to do that to them again. The right thing for the right reasons. Just maybe she will believe that you get it. And it might create a place for trust to begin again. But I promise you won't trust those selfish answers to believe that you won't hurt her again. And then there's the idea of loving and respecting oneself in godly and appropriate ways. And that's not it. Let's learn how to stop making impactful choices just from our emotions and start learning to do what is best for the other one. Now, many people feel like they have an obligation to give money to the church. Don't worry, I'll tread lightly here. Some tithe like there's some rule that they need to follow. Like there's the laws in the Bible that say you have to give. Well, if all the law and the prophets hang on the statement of loving God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and others as yourself, isn't the right reason to tithe is because you're trying to love God in return? And you're trying to love your church family appropriately, among other reasons? Oh, the church will receive your offering for the wrong reason, because it still pays the bills. But don't you think God wants you to share from your heart and your growing understanding of how to return love? Not out of a legalistic duty. What about if you have a friend that's caught in sin? The heart can keep you from saying something because you don't want to lose their friendship. That's phileo love. But agape love would have you find a way to lovingly bring it to their attention. And if it was serious enough, like adultery, then the right loving thing is to have that conversation with them. And if they continue, then maybe the loving thing to do is not be close to them, because it may be condoning their behavior or taking further steps laid out by the church. Always remember, though, that there is a loving way to tell someone the truth. Some would do it in a judging and condemning way, and who wants to hear that? The best way to start those conversations with a friend is to ask the question, do you believe that I love you? Do you believe that I care about you? If they say no, then you may not have a place to speak truth into their lives and have them hear you. If they say yes, then you say, I am going to say something to you because I love you. I want to share with you a powerful thought. This is a quote from a good friend and mentor, Dr. Paul Carlisle, who is a pastor slash Christian therapist. Listen closely to what Dr. Paul taught me. The will cannot choose from ideas the mind does not hold. The will cannot choose from ideas the mind does not hold. We can only respond to life from the ideas held within our mind. Our souls are like water bottles. If you put enough pressure on a water bottle, what comes out the top? Water. Why? Because that's what was put in there, right? If you want something different to come out, you have to put something new and different in it. Who we are at the core was formed by life and has whatever we have in us from all of life's learning and experiences. Whatever that is what will come out when pressure is applied, when life happens. If you want something different to come out of you, you have to put something different in. In the form of new and godly ideas. Look at this short parable in Matthew 13:44. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like treasure hidden in a field, which a man found and hid, and for joy over it, he goes and sells all that he has and buys that field. The treasure is a relationship with Jesus Christ and all the godly ideas he teaches us in his word. When we see the value of that treasure, we will sell out all of our worldly ideas and buy the new kingdom ideas. Listen closely to your pastor when he preaches. He understands kingdom ideas, and when you see their value for your life, you will sell out your worldly ideas and buy the new kingdom ideas for your wills to choose from. Ken understands what agape love is. He has proven this by his actions, by his decisions, and by his life. John 13:35 says this, "By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another." It uses the word agape, that willful choice to do what is best for others. Everyone will know you by your agape love, brothers and sisters, not necessarily about how you feel about each other, but how you make godly choices that are best and right for each other. I'm asking you to fill your minds with new kingdom ideas for your wills to choose from, because life is about making willful choices to have agape love, making willful choices to do what is best for God, for others, and even for ourselves. I'm not here to push a book, but I just wanted you to know that if you'd like to learn more about phileo and agape love and some of these other ideas, you can find them in a book I wrote. You can just Google, "If you love me, you will, ... Oh, they have a picture up there now. I didn't know that. That threw me off. Wow. If you can't afford that book, come and talk to me. I promise you I'll get one in your hands. It has been such a blessing to be with you today, to look at you all from this point of view, and to meet and see some people from other service in my family. Thank you for your attention. Thank you, Pastor Ken and staff, for allowing me to share with our new church family.